WBRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Hello, and indeed ahoy hoy. I'm stretching out the word in a different place this week for no good reason. My name is Dan, welcome to BRB UK. It is episode 413 of above mentioned podcast. Good day, how are you? Good. Looking forward to the dumpster fire that is going to be the world after next Tuesday's presidential election. I am. I'm offering all the Americans I know a one-time-only deal to come back and join us. And this time I'm going to promise them representation with taxation. That's what I'm going to do. So if you know any Americans, one-time deal, they can come back and be a part of this mighty fine country if they don't like the way theirs is going. Anyway, enough of that. Coleman, hello.
One sec, Dan. Hold on.
What?
Delay this game again. I will murder you and your whole family. Lots of love, Coleman. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Right, sorry. Hi!
Just hi!
Bit of an email I had to send there. Sorry,
really?
I forgot. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Sounded necessary.
You've got to keep on top of those totally necessary and not at all overblown and overreacting death threats.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm. They won't write themselves.
Nope. Sadly, they won't, which means there's no excuse for you actually writing one. Tim, hello.
Hello.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Really?
Yeah, I'm okay.
You don't sound mega convinced, I'm not going to lie.
No. Yeah, well, we know. But other than the state of the world, I am good.
Hey, look, it might all get better on November 4th. It's okay.
Well, no.
Well, it might a little bit.
A little bit, maybe, hopefully, if it doesn't spark an American Civil War, then fine. Get doctoring, Dan. We need some vaccines and stuff.
Mate, I'm on it. Seriously, that's why I keep having to miss podcasts, is because seriously, the genuine fact, I'm seriously doing COVID science.
Yeah, and it takes a long time to reprogram these mind control chips to go inside the vaccine.
It does, and you know, it is really difficult because Bill Gates is very... He's very exacting about how the New World Order want the microchips being put in people.
Exactly. I like it.
It's true. It is true. And, you know, and he hasn't got a lot of time. What with that? The kind of the running of the illicit ring, you know, social rings that apparently are happening as well. It's very, very difficult. Very difficult. But, you know, we're doing what we can to keep the people subjugated and convince them that COVID is real.
Well, I know it's real because Tim got a 5G ready phone.
That's what did it.
Really?
Obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that, we all know East Finchley's a hotspot, and that is just due to your phone being 5G,
yep,
clearly.
That's what's caused all the COVID. Can we stop talking absolute nonsense and talk absolute nonsense about games
instead? Can I just clarify? By the way, just in case you didn't pick up, we were just
taking a lot of sarcasm there.
A lot of sarcasm. COVID, real. COVID, bad news. I am trying science to fight COVID.
Wear a mask,
Tim,
wash your hands.
Got a 5G phone, has nothing to do with COVID. And lastly, I'd just like to remind you all to wash your f***ing hands.
Yeah,
all right. Of course.
Wash your f***ing hands.
And don't touch your face.
Tim, stop touching your
face.
Don't
touch your face.
Tim, what are you doing?
I'm touching my face.
Really don't touch your face. You're screwing up your audio somehow.
I mean, Coleman doesn't care whether or not you get COVID or not. It's all about
don't mess with the audio.
And
don't drum on the
fine.
Desk. Don't grab your mic.
Jesus, Tim, you would have thought after doing this for nigh on 10 years you'd have half an idea of what you're doing.
I've got no idea what any of us are doing, Dan. None. But we should be talking about video games. That's what we should be doing.
We certainly should. We're going to mix things up this week.
Whoa.
You know why? Because we always find we run out of time to talk about what we done played and spend too much time vamping on the week's news. So we're going to do what we done played first. Thank you, Giant Bomb. We've totally stolen your
idea.
I know, right?
Yeah, we're literally going now, what we done played, topics of discussion, and then we're going through the listener feedback, community feedback. We are literally stealing Giant Bomb's format at this point. Now we just got to record for like 3.5 hours an episode.
Thanks, Coleman.
It does kind of make a bit more sense now that we're doing more of the listeners' questions as well, because they often tend to kind of drift in with the news as well. So it kind of makes sense to have those two sections next to each other. And like you say, we keep on running out of time when we're talking about games that we should be talking about more.
Tim can't talk shortly about anything. Sorry.
What games we done played, guys? Because I didn't done played anything, because I've been really busy.
Are we going to let Tim go first?
Yeah, shall I get one out of the way first so we can...
I don't know, it depends.
Sandwich with Dan's one.
Yeah, you've got two, so what's your first one?
I'm happy to be the spam in the Tim sandwich.
So, for your first bit of bread for this week. I've been playing for review. I was given a review copy of Oddworld New and Tasty, which I know has come out on other formats in the past, but has recently come out on Switch, basically.
I have a question.
Out on Switch this week. Yes?
I have a question. Did you get this as a digital or a physical copy?
I got it as a digital copy. Unfortunately, because, I've seen the physical copies are quite cool, actually. Like,
Leia, however, due to the unique blend of herbs and spices Nintendo put on their cartridges, it is not... Although it's new, definitely not tasty.
Not tasty.
And I just wanted to hear from you, if it was a physical copy, could you confirm that it tastes awful?
I couldn't. My digital copy tastes of nothing, I'm afraid, Dan.
Really?
So I have nothing to report on that front.
Did you lick it? Did you lick the phone cable as it came down the phone pipe?
I didn't try it as fully as I possibly could, but then I'm not entirely sure how I could. Anyway, for anyone that isn't aware, Oddworld New and Tasty is a ground-up remake of Oddworld Abe's Odyssey from PS1 era, basically. And I don't know about you guys, I think we've spoken about it before, and I think it was a similar thing. Like, I loved the game back in the PS1 era. Mm, it was a kind of beautiful-looking PlayStation game. But I think, again, something we've spoken about on the show before is that the original game doesn't hold up to my memory of the game.
Actually, can I just a general pro tip?
Yeah.
Don't go back and play games you loved as a child or when you were younger, because they look like arse.
Yeah, but this is why ground-up remakes and remakes done well can be a good thing, I think, because they've done a good job of this. Like, it really does look like a new shiny version of the old game that lives up to the memory of what you thought of the game type of thing. Like, it's got that kind of, and I think it was one of the first games that I remember doing it where it kind of rotated the view in a 3D plane from a cut scene into where you were moving throughout the level and stuff.
Yeah. Which, when you kind of go back and... So, I do own a copy, so I do have... You know, I will talk about emulation and stuff in this case, playing the PlayStation version. And with the case of any emulation, if you just natively do it, there's a lot of blown-up pixels, unless you do some smoothening and messing around with and stuff. And Oddworld is one of those. Smoothening. Yeah, it's a word.
Ah, I love it. Love any word.
Like my head. It's a smoothening.
But
the case... I specifically remember being quite enamored with the cutscenes of Oddworld on the PlayStation, but then when it goes to gameplay, like, you kind of had scan lines and a little bit of pixelating, artifacting type thing going on, and then it looked seamless if it wasn't for that. And it was the same with Final Fantasy VII. They did a similar thing, but yeah. Anyway, but the new version looks absolutely gorgeous. I love this on the PlayStation.
Can I just say what a bunch of old men we sound like? Yeah, back in my day when FMV were encoded at 320p. For some reason, old me lives in Yorkshire.
I think we discussed that in episode 400, but anyway.
I think the original came on a demo disc with my PlayStation. Like the play. Yeah, because they used to do those demo disc compilations that came with your PlayStation, and they changed them for different version models of the console. Mine had Abe's Odyssey on it.
I remember picking up the game at launch and being really excited about playing it, and it kind of definitely delivering. And I think one of the best menu screens, like, opening before you even get into the game, just the fact that you could do the whole game speak thing with him, and, you know, do the whole farting stuff.
Yeah,
and
they've replicated that as well.
Yeah, and it's there again, and it was just nice to see and kind of fiddle with. I probably didn't spend as much time as I did with it originally.
the the fart jokes aren't as funny when you're in your 30s.
Yeah, that's possibly it.
Really?
But
really? Come on, be honest with yourself.
But yeah, like,
they're just as funny. You just secretly, they're more of a guilty pleasure.
I'm pretending to be an adult now.
As far as I can remember, it's a bit since I've played through more than, I think when I played the original game, as in Ace Odyssey recently, I've only played the first couple of levels, if that sort of idea. Whereas this, I've obviously played a bit deeper into to have a go. Got through all the levels with Ilum, if you remember him. I kind of hadn't played with him for a while, but he's the kind of thing that you ride and it goes a bit faster and you can jump over things and stuff. But yeah, anyway, it's something I'd forgotten about and only remembered when I'd got to that point in this game, basically. But yeah, anyone that doesn't know the general story, like, you're playing the character of Abe, who kind of was employee of the month at one time at a company, that kind of he finds out that they're planning on turning all of his people into snacks, basically, to kind of boost their falling profit lines. He stumbles upon this and then kind of goes on an adventure to free his other Mudokons, are they Mudokons? Mudokons?
I used to say Mudokon, but I'm assuming that, like, that's something I read as a child, so it might be wrong.
I'm not sure of the pronunciation. But it's a kind of action puzzle platformer that, yeah, like, I don't know. I still have a similar feeling, and this is obviously from just me, where I prefer the kind of exploration based puzzles rather than the kind of very slightly demanding action platform bits, basically. It's a very exacting game. It really kind of, yeah.
I think there's more emphasis on the puzzle than the platform, and
yeah,
a lot of that puzzle is reflex based as well as trying to work out, like, pull this lever to make this thing happen, but if this thing happens then this isn't accessible, so you got to kind of move to this area to pull the, it's working all that stuff out.
And it does a thing that I'd forgotten it does, but it makes it feel slightly more organic in gameplay, and then it makes it feel more like you're interacting with actual characters in that world. But at the same time, it makes some of the runs feel a little bit unfair. But it does this thing where it won't always... It's not like a perfect detection of AI. Like, if you're moving and you're moving between areas, sometimes someone will spot you when you really don't think they have a right to and stuff like that. And there seems to be, and I don't know if this is the case, but it seems to be there are some fudging of the rules at times in terms of you need to be exact with your jumps and stuff like that, but in terms of, like, interacting with some of the other characters, sometimes you'll easily be able to chant and capture someone, but then standing in the exact same point they'll shoot you where they weren't able to shoot you before, and, you know, little things like that.
Does it kind of ever feel unfair? Is it a bit selective about how pernickety it can be sometimes?
Right, and I think yes, and I think also, and as I said, for me it might just be it's a bit overly demanding in some of the kind of platform areas, but I don't know, I don't mind it as such. It does feel that there are load times in there that you would have thought in the modern era and with everything else they should have been more diminished than they are, and I don't know if that's a deliberate thing to keep it so that you've got that slight kind of I don't know. There's definitely something in this game where you don't like killing Abe, even though Abe is going to die quite a lot. You know what I mean? Like, he makes a really, like, sad noise when he dies, and, like, you don't want to kill him. But
Tim, I would like to hear a dramatic recreation of that noise, please.
No.
Yes.
That's a pretty good version of his laugh.
But, yeah, like, I mean, it's got the classic kind of, you know, hello, follow me, and all the stuff that everyone kind of knows from that. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, like, I don't know, it's really nice, and I kind of have enjoyed playing it, but I would be slightly concerned if someone hadn't played it before and was coming into this game. Does it hold up in terms of, I don't know, maybe more like 5-10 years ago I would have said that it doesn't, like, pull you through the game as much as modern day games do in terms of, like, spoon-feeding you exactly how you interact with things and exactly how things happen. Like, I don't know, I don't remember previously, but in the previous game, I don't remember there being a kind of visual clue to the audio clues. You know, when you kind of got the audio things where you have to whistle and fart to, in a certain order to get past people.
I like playing that game, My Local Branch of Budgeons.
Yeah, there's a succession of things where you have to mimic the password, or know the password to get past the point, or mimic what they're doing. And
I have a question. I think, do they call it an arse word rather than a password?
From memory, like, those were all just audio previously, whereas in this one, it gives you a little visual clue as to which type of whistle it's doing. There's a slight different... there's some notes, musical notes that come out of their mouth when they're whistling, and you can see the difference between the high and the low whistle, so you don't just have to go on the pitch of the audio. And I don't remember that being a feature of the previous game. So I think they've added little touches like that that make some of the things a bit more accessible, but then some of the things a bit more easy as well in that sense.
Oh, they totally have added things to kind of make it accessible and the way it looks and stuff. And it is all welcome changes. But then there's still that level of difficulty from the PlayStation. And now I'm going to hand in my pro gamer card, because I will say, playing on easy, because they added
You are so 1337, Coleman.
I know, but they added an easy mode to New and Tasty, which is how I'm playing through the game, because I just want to get through the damn story so I can get ready for the next one.
See, one thing that I found odd about the game at the time, odd about an odd world game, but
odd world.
But have been reminded is odd again now. Like, it world. Seems to me that in the beginning levels in the factory, it teaches you the kind of mechanics of the game, and you think it's all going to be about saving the other people and, you know, opening the gates for them to go through and all that type of stuff. And then I don't mind that it kind of varies from that, but it seems to teach you things that you then don't do, like the chanting to take over people. There's almost more places where you can't do it than the places are where you can. And it kind of feels that it stops you from using the game mechanics at the time. And I know it's used I'd in say that's more the case in like that, but
I mean, so spoiler alert, there are secret rooms that you have to go in and free MacGuffins in and stuff. And I find there's more of those rooms where they put in mechanics in place to stop you using the chanting to just take over a slig and shoot and work your way out that way. But especially within Rapture Farms, within the beginning level, there's more options to take over than none. But I think it's that thing of, here's a mechanic that you know you can, like, you see a bad guy, you know what to do. You take over their body, you shoot, you kill them, you do whatever you need to do, self-destruct, and carry on, pull a lever. And then the further you go out, it's like, right, you know how to do that, but now we're going to take that away from you because there's going to be all these obstacles in your way. And it kind of works. You know, it's that ramping up difficulty of the 90s platform puzzler, I guess.
But yeah, anyway, that just seemed like an odd thing, because you seem to spend a lot of the time there afterwards going around and doing other things other than freeing people and getting back to the factory stuff. But yeah, I mean, I don't know about, I think, again, we may have discussed this before, but when I originally played the game, it was one of the first games I remember doing a thing where you get to that point and it says whether you've saved enough of the Medicons, whatever. But yeah, whether you've saved enough of them or not, and then it tells you haven't, you have to go all the way back. And I've never got all the way to that point having saved enough, or never gone back and saved enough to get through it again. So I kind of want to keep it up and keep playing through the game to see if I can get to that point and get beyond it and go further than I did before, especially as it looks nice and it plays nice. And as I said, I'm enjoying it slightly through the lens of nostalgia, but I don't know if it would be as enjoyable without that, but it certainly is enjoyable with it. So if anyone else is, you know, in a position where they haven't played the game for a few years, it kind of nicely fits on the Switch. Like, I've played most of it in handheld and it seems to be fine there. Played a little bit on the TV, And, you know, it does look okay on the TV. It does look, you know, well, fine. I don't know if it would look better on other platforms, but I think it's one that works quite well for the handheld sort of, you know, being able to take it on the go and be able to pick up and play here and there as well, sort of thing.
I mean, one of the things I often struggle with when you kind of get these remakes, it sounds like they've been quite cognizant of this, is that kind of remakes or HD remasters or whatever they are these days can feel almost too slavishly tied to the source material. Does Abe's Odyssey, this particular remake, does it take enough risk to just move things on a little bit from like the late 90s, or is it held back by its reverence to the source material, do you think?
I think it's a faithful remake, and they could have done more to make the gameplay generally more accessible. But I said, Coleman said there's an easy version. I haven't really tried that. I just went in normal. But yeah, I don't know. I think this is such a classic game and a well-known and well-loved game that I don't think they would have wanted to depart from it too much. I think, as Coleman alluded to earlier, there is another version of it coming up, and that's something where they can branch out and do something new and different with the character.
They've taken the idea of Abe's Exodus and changed that into whatever the next game is, and it's taking on a completely different storyline. So I don't know if, you know, for all I know, you could get to the end of this game and they've Final Fantasy VII remaked it and changed it and stuff enough to set up the sequel. But yeah, for what it is, if you like the Castlevania style of game, if you like roguelikes, if you like, you know, the kind of punishing difficulty, 2D platformer, puzzler, with some Castlevania stuff thrown in there, then this is a game for you. I really do recommend. But I will say, so if you're watching the video version of this on YouTube, this isn't the version that Tim's playing. This was me doing some capture on the PlayStation 4 Pro. So the version I have might look slightly better. I don't know. I haven't checked out any kind of tech specs between the two versions of the game.
But as I said, playing it, the Switch version ran and played fine, and yeah, I had no problem with it from a technical aspect at all, and it looks really nice on both screens. So yeah, I thought it was decent from that side of things as well. It's been nice playing through it, and I do want to kind of persevere and get to the end of the game, and kind of see where it goes story-wise after the bit that I haven't seen. But as you say, I don't know if it is a little bit different, and they try to make it a bit different, but it's definitely got me interested in the universe again, because it's a universe I've always liked but haven't really got on with some of the games they've made in the universe, basically. But
and it's one they seem to be trying to bring back into it's gone from a remake of the first game into let's branch this off into a brand new version of the story that isn't going the way you expect, because they did make four Oddworld games, and three of them Abe-centric games. And they, you know, after the second game on the PlayStation, and they went to Xbox and what have you, they kind of went a direction that everyone was expecting with Stranger's Wrath and Munch's Odyssey.
Yeah, I liked both games, but didn't love them as much as I liked the first Abe's Odyssey, I think, basically. Mm. And I think that was the case for a lot of people.
I'll be interested to see where this goes for the next one. And it is Abe-centric again, and it seems on this line again. And yeah, if you've seen the shots of the new Oddworld game and you're liking the look of it, then go back and play this one on whatever format you have, but is available on the Switch as well. I will give a quick nod to this as well, because our friends over at Rebellion, they actually commissioned a documentary about PlayStation recently that's on VOD. That I watched a couple of weeks ago. It's called From Bedrooms to Billions, The PlayStation Revolution. And there's a section where the creators of Oddworld kind of talk about going from trying to make it in Hollywood to go, right, video games seem to be the thing we should be working on, and then taking this principle of Hollywood filmmaking into Abe's Odyssey and mixing it with old school platforming mechanics and stuff. It's a small section, but it's explained very well in that from the creators. But yeah,
I just remembered the other point I was going to make was, generally we said before about this possibly not going down as well as having to like spoon feed people through the whole thing and kind of teaching them the mechanics. But I think in present environment where there are a lot of action platformers that have been quite hard and a bit more old school kind of nature about them, I actually think this fits quite well in that current environment. No, like it's another one that sits alongside them. And yeah, people that may not have played this originally but have played stuff like Hollow Knight and Dead Cells and other things more recently kind of thing, that might be something that this may interest those people that have played those sorts of games and not this before. So yeah,
that's
Watch
Oddworld.
Those hands punching that mic, Tim.
Yep
Oddworld, new and tasty. Pick it up now, or if you've already
got it,
pick up a second copy. Or if you don't want a second copy, play your old copy. Just play it.
Ah,
it's good.
What?
Yeah.
Dan.
What?
Wake up. Noiter.
Noiter.
What?
Noiter?
It's a strange word. What does it mean,
Dan? Is this
Dan?
What you've been playing?
Noiter. Except without the bad Japanese accent. Yes, Noiter is a game I've been playing on the PC. It was in early access till recently, and once it crossed the final furlong, I ended up picking it up. So, hey, look, roguelikes, they're a thing.
Love
them. I like being a wizard. Being a wizard in a roguelike.
You're a wizard, ooh. Danny. And
I am.
Something good at that.
Well, no.
No.
I'm a wizard who is particularly good at blowing himself up.
You're a bad wizard.
It turns out fire whilst in a bath of whiskey, bad idea.
I mean,
these are the situations you will find yourself in Noiter. You will find yourself having tried to escape from some wee beastie, and you've ended up jumping, taking a leap of faith, ending up dropping into a ginormous pool of whiskey, and you're trying to, incinerate the bad man who put you in that situation, and end up lighting fire to the whiskey and therefore yourself and dying.
Is this a regular Friday night for you, Dan, pre-COVID?
I've also chopped myself my own head off in Noiter with a circular saw that I conjured. That was not good. What else happened? Yes, I broke some ice and it fell on my head. That killed me. So what I'm getting at, really, is Noiter is a game where possibilities, and I know this is a cliche, are practically endless of the ways that you try and do things to the bad people and other objects that try and do you harm. But 9 times out of 10, it's a comedic death for yourself. It's all about experimentation, Noiter. The setup is you are a wizard, Harry. And you're a wizard, Harry.
And a thumping good night.
You start off at the mouth of a cave in every run, and descend down through that
good
cave.
Old mouth.
Or you can try and explore in other directions in the world in which you live. And every run is unique. Every run is completely randomised, and actually similar.
Would you say it's procedurally generated?
Well, indeed, this is procedurally generated, and I think the USP for Noiter is that all of the materials that you encounter in the world, it's a 2D side scroller. Up and down scroller. It's 2D. I know what I'm on about, even if you don't.
I know what you're talking about, and those watching on YouTube will know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's all about everything in it is actually simulated. So something that's made out of wood, fire will spread along it, as opposed to like some wet soil, fire will go out in that.
What?
and it's actually makes it really interesting to play, because you try and set up scenarios where, you know, if you've got particularly difficult enemy that you're trying to get rid of, or a bunch of them, that you almost try and like lay a trap for them and work out how to use the environment to your advantage. And kind of on top of that is being a wizard. You like a wand. Wizards love wands, right? We know all know that.
Well,
wizards love a wand.
The wand chooses the wizard, Dan.
Well, turns out this wand's a bit of a bell end then, because it's chosen a rubbish wizard who likes to self-immolate. Each time you spawn in, you get not all wands are the same. The ones you get will have a randomly assigned set of spells, and you can combine these spells depending on what else you find along the way, and get unique combinations. So like a laser sword that shoots out firebolts, for example.
Okay.
And you can combine these in all kinds of different ways just to see what happens. Usually the answer is fiery death.
And then you set yourself for yourself. Fire and died.
Yeah, exactly. There's a common theme going on here. Or like you can have a wand that casts a rain cloud above you. So if you're on fire, you cast that, you get put out. Or if you cast it above fire-based enemies, it injures them, for example. So it's actually a really, really deep game, despite the fact that it's all a bit of a slightly chaotic bit of a laugh, it seems. And I think the one thing that took me a while to cotton on is I think with a lot of roguelikes, we're quite used to just kind of romping through the next run. Whatever happens, happens. It's fine. You pick up the pieces and just move on to the next run. This, you really, really need to be quite slow and paced and strategic about what you do. Again, otherwise you'll end up setting yourself on fire.
Or sawing your head off.
Yeah. Or sawing your head off, or both.
Oh.
I have done that, actually.
Flaming saw.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, I think the other thing to note is that unlike, say, roguelites like Hades Dead Cells, there is no persistent progression. Every run is fresh, brand new.
Exciting.
Start from absolute scratch. So that's another reason if you find a really good, just happen to kind of stumble upon really good combinations of stuff in that particular world seed that you've spawned into, it kind of incentivizes you to try and stay alive, to make the most of it. One of the frustrating things about the game is also one of its strengths, in that it actually holds a lot of information back from you, and a lot of it is all about discovery of how certain elements in the world interact. And that's kind of sprung up a bit of a kind of a brain trust around it online in the Steam community, or indeed on other websites, where people have started to work things out for themselves. And that's quite cool that there is an organic community growing up around the game, but also can be quite frustrating if you pick up this game and get something you aren't quite expecting. I could see if people had a bad couple of first runs just due to the play of chance, they could get put off this game quite quickly. But look, I'm absolutely loving this game. It is one of the most unique, fun, silly yet serious games that I've played this year, and the 2D physics simulation in it is really, really good. It's like you can just try stuff out, see if it works, and often it does. And you know, even if it's like there's a lava pit in front of you but you've got a big you've got a wand that shoots water, or a bottle full of water, if you squirt the water at it, the lava will harden and you can go past. So even things like that, it's
we don't condone trying that in real life, though.
Just, no, don't do that.
Just
not with a squirt ball. If you got a magic wand, go all crazy.
Or a super soaker. Super soaker.
Yeah, super soaker. Fine.
Super soaker versus volcano.
I will say, kind of looking into this, I was trying to get footage ready for the show, but looking at the way it plays, it is very much. It's kind of the visual fidelity of an Amiga, but the kind of mechanics of a high powered PC game, and the way the particle movements and things work. So it's very impressive looking, is what I'm trying to say. It looks like childhood, but the way you remember games in your childhood.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super fun game. It's, you know, if discovering how the world of Noita works is something that sounds like it would appeal to you, you know, this, you're going to love a game like this. Is it true pick up and play Dead Cells friendly levels of enjoyment? Probably not. No,
I've looked at the wikis that go alongside this.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hardcore from that point of view.
You know,
but
score.
If that sounds like if that voyage of discovery is something you would like to embark upon, then, you know, Noita's, you know, I love the game. I think it's great, but I also don't think it's for everybody. So that's Noita, available on Steam. I think I picked it up for 13 great British pounds. I'm not sure what the price is currently.
I think it's about that, like $12.99 or $13.99 or something. Because I was like, when she listed it last week, I was like, should I give this a go for next week? And then I remembered I've seen like a million Let's Plays of this and gone, no, I'm not ready for this yet.
Yeah, it's great. So Noita, Steam, pick it up. I've enjoyed it. If it sounds like it'll tickle your undercarriage, check it out.
Good. Tim?
Yeah?
Money. You spent £100 almost
have
on
you been investing
Mario Kart
again,
Live.
Tim?
Yeah, well,
what have you invested in?
Something you should both have invested in.
No.
For two reasons. One,
it's not an investment.
It's fun, and we can play in three-player. That's a good thing.
Yeah, but we have to be together in person.
Yeah, I know.
That
so maybe save it for
That
time.
Is against the rules. I'm tier
Boris
two.
Boris Johnson won't let us.
But Dan, reason number two is particularly directed at you.
This involves
you
my
said
cat.
Way back about 4 years ago that you weren't going to get involved in VR at the moment because you saw a brighter future for AR just around the corner. And I said, it's quite far around the corner. And you said, well, no, wait. And now you've waited 4 years,
that's
and me and Coleman
impression.
Have been enjoying VR while you have been sitting there not doing so. And then...
In fact, I believe Dan said that AR's right around the corner and I wish to take that corner at blistering speed with a Mario go-kart with a camera sellotaped to the top of it.
And now you
whilst imploring people to eat my dust,
but,
I think was how I finished
but
off
this,
that conversation.
This is literally giving you the chance to do that, Dan, but this is the best use of AR I've seen in gaming so far, basically.
What's going on?
But for anyone that doesn't know, Mario Kart Live Home Circuit, which is a slightly lengthy, wordy title, is a kind of physical cart, if you like. That
definitely cart.
Is basically kind of remote controlled from your Switch, but then it's got a camera mounted on the top of it that you can see the feed of from your Switch screen, so you can drive it through watching the screen. And on top of that, there's some AR elements where basically you get to drive and mark out a course, set up some gates, and then you can race around that course while racing, admittedly only like other characters. I haven't played it with other people yet, and I think there are more limitations to having physical carts than actually what we've been doing, is just racing against the AR opponents, which are a load of
Koopa kids.
I was going to say Koopalings, but anyway,
Koopa kids.
And you're kind of racing against them, and when like things happen in the game, it does actually affect your car. So if you get kind of electrified, and some of the things that would generally have other effects, like you don't get shrunk down small in this version of the game and stuff like that. So
what, you can't bend the laws of physics?
You can't actually do that to the cart. But
that's it. I'm out. I'm not interested.
There is some other things they've added which I'll come on to in a moment, which are really fun. But generally speaking, it's kind of taking what you can see as the feed and then superimposing a game of Mario Kart around it, where you've got these other AR drivers that you're racing against. But if you shoot them with a red shell, or say you get shot with a red shell or something happens to you and it slows down your cart physically slows down. Likewise, if you're using a mushroom to get a speed burst, you can actually watch the car get a little speed burst as you press the mushroom and stuff like that, and it speeds up. It's really funny. Like, you're going around in like 50cc and doing it on the screen, and you're going around, you're going, I'm going pretty fast. And then you'll look up and see the car, and it's like, meee. And you're like,
that is quite sweet.
It's really quite smart. It's obviously the difference of scale kind of makes a difference to the how fast you think you're going in terms of speed.
Is one far away and the other small?
Yes, is that
what you're trying to say?
But as you race through different cups, and I'll come back to the cups in a second as well, but as you race through the different cups,
I have a question.
Yes.
Can you actually race through a cup?
You can race around it.
If you hollowed out a cup, maybe.
Yep.
Ooh. And it's a big cup.
Big cup, big race. There you go. As you race through the cups, you unlock the different CCs. So you unlock 50cc, 100cc, goes all the way up to 200cc. And also unlocks a mirror mode as well, basically. And yeah, at 200cc, the kart does get a lot more nippy than it did at 50cc, basically. So
I have a question.
Yes.
How well do the karts handle? Because like thinking back to remote control cars, or you know, Scalextrics is a bad example. Because it's like on rails.
It's on rails, literally.
It is literally on rails. But the kind of the inertia of those things never quite feels right because of the weight of it. You know, they are lightweight plastic objects.
Yeah, yeah. But this gets even weirder. Yeah, it feels like Mario Kart. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the Mario Kart hop.
You can do the Mario.
But it doesn't physically hop the cart, but it just makes it a bit easier to steer. And likewise, you can do the whole drifting into boost and then like boosting out of the corners type thing. And it speeds you up on the cart physically up when it boosts, but you obviously don't jump up in the air and you're obviously not properly skidding, but it does make it easier to take tight corners. And obviously, that's something that they know about the game and they know people will be looking for that. So they've kind of fed that into the design of how it works. But one of the interesting things as I mentioned, there's a mirror mode, but that's just obviously mirroring the track.
So you hold up a literal mirror to the car.
But there's also a thing, basically you've got four gates that you set out to mark out the course, but you can have those gates doing different things. So generally they'll just be plain and you just have to drive through them. But you can also have them so they're set up as pipes that where there's bonuses scrolling through them so that you can pick up a weapon or something. But then there's another gate type that you come across in one of the different races. And yeah, all of the races that you go through like have a different mechanic to them. There's some of them where there's the mechanic.
Well,
there's definitely kind of an environmental thing going on, and usually something on the track kind of based around it. So you'll have like piranha plants on the track or piranha plants on the gates. But there's one particular gate where you'll go through and it will reverse the camera. Right? So it flips left and right for your camera, but it also flips your steering. At first it breaks for your brain because you don't realize how they've done it, because left goes right and right goes left, but then you have to steer the way you would as if it was on screen, and it broke my brain at first, but then I realized that they're not just flipping the camera, they're also the view from the camera, also flipping the controls as well, which is really clever and works really well. But on some more complicated courses especially, it can break your brain. It really does. I'm like, oh no, I was first and now I'm last. You can also do funny things where you actually set it up so that you leave a little shortcut for yourself where you can cut out a bit of the course and the computer players don't know they can do that. But likewise, you have to be a bit careful to not have physical objects in the way of that are going to create a obstacle for you that won't be creating an obstacle for the computer controlled characters as well. But like setting up courses, we struggled to do a figure eight in my room, but we did a kind of elongated figure eight that had like two straights either side of it a little bit kind of thing. But generally, like we did a one where we went like all the way around the table and left like the table set up, and it's kind of nice when the car disappears from view and then reemerges somewhere else. It somehow adds something else to the race if you can't see the car the whole time. And we did one track where we did like multiple rooms. So you need to lay out the four gates, but when you're actually drawing the track, you can draw the track wherever you like. And then you don't necessarily have to drive on that track when you're doing it. You could, and I've seen people setting up like physical barriers so that you can't go outside the track either. But you can also just, as I said, leave a bit of the course where you can take a shifty little shortcut to jump in front of them and stuff like that. But we also did it so that we had like one gate on the entrance to a room. So it was facing away from you, and the direction of the gates makes a difference as well. So we had like the fourth gate facing away to going in the room, first gate in the hallway, race through the first gate in the hallway, and then race round two and three in my lounge, and then back through the fourth gate to then loop back round to the first one, and then that was the whole track, basically. So you can do, like, tracks across multiple rooms, which has been quite good fun. And just, yeah, every time you set up a track, you don't necessarily have to just race it once and then set up a new track, because the different, like, mechanics and the different things that work from level to level means that you can literally do a cup, which is three races in this rather than four, but you do like three different races, and you can set up like one race and then do a whole cup on it, and just it will feel quite different for each of the different levels because they feel a bit different. One of the mechanics I really like that they add is like wind, so it's just blowing you to one side, so you have to kind of steer against it a little bit, and so there'll be one particular level where that's really windy and stuff like that. Sometimes that's not always at the best because it might not suit the design and layout of your course. So sometimes you'll make a course really difficult for yourself because the like that particular mechanic doesn't work well with the layout of the course you've got. That's a bit hit and miss sometimes, and just trial and error and knowing what you can and can't do. But as well as the gates, they give you some little sign type things that are just like direction arrows where, yeah, you can see them visually in the game and they kind of highlight as well, but they also designate to the computer controlled characters where the course is a bit. So you can actually set them up, say, next to your couch or a table so that they know that's a physical object they can't go into, and so that you've got a bit of a hint to steer around that corner sort of thing and stuff like that. But
so, I mean, will it kind of give you a warning if it thinks, hey, look, this track is going to really suck, are you sure you want to lay it out like this? Or
and we deliberately like messed around with it. There's one where we wanted to see, and well, my flatmate was like, okay, I've got an idea, I want to see this. And what he did was did a regular course, but then he got to one point and literally did a spiral circle in a row for like five or six times and then completed the course. And whenever we were driving it, we just had to drive straight over that bit, but all the computer-controlled characters were driving the whole spiral before they could come out of the race, basically. So you can mess around with it a bit, and it's one of those things where it's a case of, well, how much do you want to cheat? And as I said, you could put physical objects in the way, but even with stuff like that, it would be difficult to actually drive that spiral.
So literally all it expects you to do is just to hit the checkpoints in order. It doesn't necessarily keep track of if you went off where you've drawn the track.
Yeah. Okay. And you've got like the where you've drawn the track is where the other drivers will drive. You don't necessarily have to drive there. You just have to go through the checkpoints in order for the right number of laps, basically.
Okay.
So, as I said, you can mess with it a bit, but you can also be a bit strict with yourself. You could also add more objects in for yourself than the computer characters would have to mess around with and stuff as well. But, yeah, like, it works surprisingly well. The carpet in my lounge is fairly worn down anyway, so it's kind of a fairly good surface for it. I would say, and I've seen people say that, if you've got lots of people in your house with long hair or lots of like long-haired dogs and stuff, that hair is particularly bad because it wraps itself around the axle.
Oh, no.
And then you have to spend time cutting it off. I haven't had any problem with that just because, as I said, quite a short carpet. Everyone in my house has quite short hair. And we've got like wooden hallway and stuff like that. So that has been good and been like going around surfaces. You can't do jumps and you can't do kind of, you know, it shouldn't leave the floor. If you leave the floor at any time when you're drawing the track, it will reset it and you have to start again. So you can't really mess around with jumps too much. You could probably add some in once you've kind of done the track, but then the computer controlled characters wouldn't see anything as a physical jump. It needs to be a flat course. But like those sorts of limitations aside, it is brilliant fun. Like the different courses don't add, like the different levels and the different cups and stuff don't add too much, and I think they've been a bit cheeky because there's one that's just a random cup, and there's I think one less cup than there normally is for a Mario Kart game, and one less race per cup as well, kind of thing. So there's not that that many different mechanics, but you unlock...
And they expect you to make your own bloody tracks as well.
But that's the thing.
It's a rip-off.
But they then kind of unlock all Britain. Those different things so you Broken can Bloody build Britain. Your own tracks Broken and Britain, add mate. All the different elements in that you want and add all the different effects that you get from the different levels and stuff as well. But yeah, like, it's... I don't know. It's a really interesting little toy. Like, the toy itself, which I kind of showed on camera last week, but it's got the little start ignition button next to the thing, and then you kind of pull it open to charge it up and stuff. And it works really nicely. Once you've paired it the first time, which wasn't that tricky, it's just like going through the little, you know, pairing a normal device. But once it's paired once, as soon as you turn on the game, turn on the cart, it's paired again and you just go as well. So it's quite easy to like pick up and play. Sort of
thing. So I've got a question. So you've been playing this with your flatmate.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I was to, in Tim speak, invest in a copy of Mario Kart Live.
Yep.
What do I get for my... How much is it?
£100.
£100.
Yes. So you get
£100.
£100. So you get the small cart. The small cart, which is a nice little toy in itself, but
so you get one or two of those.
Built in. Just the one, unfortunately. It would have been nice to have like a dual set where you get two, but you'd still need another Switch, obviously, to have in the first place. But then the game itself is a free download, but don't bother downloading it by itself because it's completely useless unless the cart's turned on, basically.
Clever Nintendo.
Yeah, see? And then you get the four gates, which are kind of big things made of cardboard. But
Bill, Melinda, and their two kids.
They're fairly,
lovely
they're
people.
They're fairly sturdy, but like considering that they're made of cardboard, they've got...
You
need to weigh them down. Yeah, sorry.
You can print out replacements, but you have to do it through the Japanese website for some reason.
Oh, right, okay. But then, yeah, the only problem I found with them is they're not very easy to pack away unless you're going to be like wearing out the bits that, yeah, if you pack them away and fold them like flat, I'm worried if you do that every time you're setting up and putting it down that they could get worn out a bit. Also, you get two of those little arrow things that I was talking about that kind of light up and go luminous in the races as well. They do say you can only use four gates, but you can use extra ones of the arrows. So if you were to get another set and I was using a set, we couldn't use more gates together, but we could use more of those arrow things at one time. I'm going to try and recreate some of those arrow things and see if they'll work. I don't know if there's some sort of AR coding in them that they recognize from the print or something, but I'm going to see if just copying them makes it able to pick up in the same way that it does with the originals, or whether
apparently
you can buy
just
more of
print
them
out. Yeah, apparently just print more arrows out.
Okay, cool.
That'll work.
That'll be good. So yeah, yep, that's something I'm going to do and mess around with at some point. But yeah, like, I knew it's slightly expensive going in, especially as it's a slightly reduced Mario Kart. Like, I was kind of factoring into the price that I was buying a game, which is normally, you know, 50, 60 quid on the Switch sort of thing. But it's not a full game of Mario Kart that you're getting as part of the equation. That said, I am not unhappy with my purchase. Like, this has been a really cool little thing. It was even, like, actually playing it was in some ways, like, better than my expectations, and my expectations were pretty high. It's been an enjoyable little thing that I really enjoyed. Like, my flatmate is like, okay, how much are one of these, and how much is a Switch, and when am I going to get those?
Oh my god,
what is the meaning of
that's
life?
That's the killer app, is it?
But, mate, I could see, and I think they've got it out at a good time, I could see this being something where as more people get to see it, and the only problem is that this year that's a bit harder to do. Going around other people's houses and seeing a physical toy is a bit harder to do. So getting out there and people getting to review it and talk about it. I bought my own copy, as we alluded to with Stupid Sounds. I can see it being quite successful as long as enough people get to see exactly what it is. And I think that's the only fear at the moment, that that's going to be a harder thing to do in current environment. But I could see it being really popular in time for Christmas. Like, if you've already got a Switch, like, and you can't really afford another console for your kid, like, I think they'd be quite happy with this as a Christmas Day present, basically. And yeah, but as I said, I really enjoyed it, and the only downside is I need other people to invest in it to play like four players.
It's not investment, Timothy.
I used it as we've been saying anyway. But yeah, if we get three other people to buy it, like, that would be really cool. Like, doing a four player Mario Kart race in AR would be, yeah, I'd like to see that. But the only problem with that is they've only got Mario and Luigi out at the moment. So hopefully in the future, this gets popular enough that they can do Toad and Peach and a few others or whatever.
I'll tell you where I am with this, Tim.
Yes.
I've listened to your argument now. Watched a lot of videos on these. I like the tech. I don't think the tech's fully there from some of the videos I've seen, some of the capture I've seen. It seems the best way to get like the best performance out of this game is to get an Ethernet connector, so you're connecting your Switch directly to your router docked, because the connectivity is Wi-Fi, not internet, but local Wi-Fi based to the car, and setting a track around where you're seated seems to be the best way of doing it and keeping connectivity.
Oh yeah,
okay.
Looking at a mouse-sized view of your room and like being a little person in a big room, that's all very interesting. And not knocking you for buying it. If I had children, I probably would be picking this up.
If you had children, you wouldn't be able to afford to pick it up, possibly. But well, yes.
Yeah. If I had children, I'd be picking this up because it looks great for them. Looking at it as it stands, I think I would be bored of this within a weekend.
Yeah.
£100 is a steep.
The only thing is,
it strikes me as a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
It's something I go, oh, that's a bit of a laugh, isn't it? And then possibly not go back to it.
Yeah.
If I didn't love Mario Kart, it would be a much harder purchase. But there's also the fact that this thing will sit quite happily on a shelf and look nice even if I never play it again, type of thing.
And there's a good chance, just like the Labo stuff, like there were Labo kits for £80 and then within a couple of months they were sitting £20 in the bargain bin. So
Labo took up a lot of space, though. I mean, this is biggish but not huge in terms of box space. But I don't know, I really do think it's one of those things where I don't think you will appreciate it enough until you've seen it and played it and gone, oh, okay. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I kind of get that now, kind of thing.
I'm sure.
And yeah, one day, hopefully, you guys can come around the house and actually play it and see what you think. But yeah.
But I will say, Tim, you've spoken so long about Mario Kart Live Home Circuit that you have, in fact, run out of footage, the 20 minutes of footage I had set aside for you. So well done.
Yep. Well done, Tim.
Well done.
Me and Carmen totally weren't messaging each other going, how long is this show?
Kill me
now. Jeez. We've almost got time for some news, I guess.
I will, right.
Yeah, we can get
no
through.
One but in. I will run through this like a mad demon.
I have a question.
Go on then.
I've been lucky enough to get my hands on an RTX 3080. Can I happily look forward to playing Cyberpunk 2077 in about 3 weeks' time?
No.
Why?
Cyberpunk 2077 has been delayed again.
Why?
It's now got a new release date of December 10th, so it's only 21 days difference. You've got to wait. There was a big statement put up on CD Projekt's Twitter page, and it seems people working on Cyberpunk, PR people working with Cyberpunk, people working on the Twitter for Cyberpunk, didn't know it was getting delayed. The higher-ups did, and didn't let them know until the very last minute when it happened. In fact, a lot of people are citing on the Twitter for Cyberpunk's official Twitter page, they've put out tweets going, definitely not getting delayed again, definitely coming out in November, definitely this, and then less than one day later had to go, we're delaying the game. So it's not a good look.
Want to take any each way bets on this show? Not like
could it be delayed into 2021? Could it be
delayed? I wonder if it might.
Nope.
I don't think you could now. And the weird thing about it is it went gold and then they delayed it. And
that's not that like, weird, though, is it? Really? That's very explainable. I mean,
well, I think the reasons they cited were optimization for next gen platforms.
Adam
Kaczynski. He was on a conference call reported by Pat Business, and he said that there's no further planned delays. Like after this last pushback, the PC version and the next gen versions of the consoles are ready to go. It's that they're finalizing the process for PS4, I'm assuming Stadia and Xbox One consoles and services. But once those are done, they're ready to go. The problem they're having is they're trying to finalize several different versions and playtest all the versions of the game.
Nine different versions, I think they said, didn't they?
Yeah, so that's Xbox One with Xbox One versions working on Xbox Series S and X, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 4 Pro, also working with PlayStation 5. At some point, you're going to have the Xbox Series X and the Xbox Series S and the PlayStation 5 versions of the game, PC and Stadia versions of the game, all at the same time. So that's kind of what's caused this.
Shouldn't have bothered with Stadia, but hey.
Yeah, and the fanboys are taking it very well.
Yeah, yes, they are.
Very
as well-reasoned denizens of the internet tend to do.
Yeah.
I did like one of the internal team at CD Projekt Red that are working on the game when I've been working on this game for this many years and I'm starting to think it doesn't exist. So I've played the game and I don't
full
know.
Full-on existential crisis.
I found that quite humorous. But yeah, 21 Days Away, it's not a long time in the grand scheme of things. I do like that gives us more time for things like Spider-Man, because I was seriously worrying that I'd have to rush through Miles Morales before getting to Cyberpunk.
But I also think it's going to go a bit insane, isn't it, in November? It's going to get very silly.
November was already silly, so I'm actually, not at all unhappy about this. I get more time off in December anyway, so that's good. And kind of mess around with things a bit more. I don't want to get totally lost in one game at the start of a kind of console generation. No, that's always the best thing anyway. I also think it's really good news for Ubisoft. But just because open world games that people would have passed by because Watch Cyberpunk's.
Dogs. Yeah, that's a good, fair enough point. I think good for Destiny as well.
Yeah. I can't remember what the game is off the top of my head, but they had a patch incoming as well, and they delayed their patch for this game and came out with it's because Cyberpunk's being delayed to our patch release date, so we're now going to wait till January because we want to let you play Cyberpunk.
In reality, I suppose it's everyone's trying to jump out the way of the oncoming juggernaut, but the juggernaut keeps changing direction. Part of the challenge.
Sees the juggernaut B word.
The juggernaut.
Speaking of delays, there was meant to be a launch title for PlayStation 5 called Destruction All Stars. We've spoken about it in the past. Kind of Destruction Derby on Rush, Rocket League looking type game.
The one I was
game.
Planning on picking up at launch, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, not going to be doing that, Tim.
Has now been delayed to February 2021. This will now instead be released as a PlayStation Plus game.
Yay!
Which is good. Apparently they're refocusing the game more on the multiplayer aspect than what was originally going to be the launch game, because that's all feedback seems to indicate to people going, oh, this is going to be like the next big Rocket League thing. Oh, we better retool the game to be the next big Rocket League thing. So that seems to be what they're doing now.
Whenever I saw this, I always had the feeling this just screams free to play, quite frankly.
I think for an online game, it makes sense for a lot of people to have it, and they've seen that that is a good thing for them and their platform. And I think they could have sent this game out to die like a lot of other games did before, or they could support it, not only support it, but also get support for PlayStation Plus and make it look like there's a serious game coming for PlayStation Plus. So, yeah, as I said, other than being slightly upset, this one game I was planning on picking up at launch, like, I'm not unhappy about the fact that that's just saved me some money and I'm going to get the game for free. So,
splendid.
Included in the subscription price. On the site, and also if you've pre-ordered the game, you will be refunded for your pre-order. Although I heard some rumblings that people that pre-ordered bundles with the console and the game had their pre-orders cancelled. But then I then heard further rumblings that that's complete BS. I don't know.
Rumble.
Someone inform me if you like. Yeah. Right, and on that same line, as well as Destruction All Stars coming to PlayStation Plus, Bugsnax will be launched Yay. On PlayStation Plus. That will be available from November the 12th till January the 4th. They have been very careful in their wording to say only PlayStation 5 console owners, which they don't usually do. They say PlayStation 5, which means you can go onto the website, download it.
Yep. Get it for
yeah,
the
that's what I did with PS4, so I had all the games ready for when I finally got the console. A little bit worried the way they're phrasing that, but hey, I should have a console in time.
Hopefully. It is
what it is.
Yeah. There was also a Nintendo Direct Mini Partner Showcase, but we're running low on time, so we can't really go through that. The big kind of head titles are right. Bravely Default 2, delayed to February 26th, 2021.
No!
There's going to be Control Ultimate Editions and Hitman 3 versions coming to Switch, but they will be the cloud versions of the game.
Can I just say that was very interesting?
Yeah,
that
was weird.
Very interesting. They're embracing that.
Yeah, I'm worried because they trialed this in Japan with
Resident Evil.
What was it? Resident Evil 7. And it's the same way as when they do like MMOs and stuff on the Switch. You can't put the game in rest mode or it resets the game. And I just don't think it's a viable way to spend your money on a game when you could play it on a different platform.
I think you can try it for free for a little bit. I was tempted to just see what Control was like.
Yeah.
Have a look. I might do that. I might report back next week.
Cool, guys. They're coming at some point. No More Heroes 3, we got some footage for that, but we only know it's coming out next year. No actual confirmed date yet, but on the back of that, they went, hey, No More Heroes and No More Heroes 2 Desperate Struggle are available right now on the Switch, which I like the idea of. Part-Time UFO is out right now.
That looked
really
adorable.
Cool.
I like the look of
that. That is from the from HAL Studios, I believe, the creators of the Kirby series and the original Smash Brothers. Your UFOs, when you're not off making crops and stuff, you're trying to build and stack and
stack
like to have little part-time jobs. I like that.
Yeah, a nice little puzzle game.
We've got a big look at Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. That there is a demo available right now if you want to play.
Now.
I'm going to go get some footage ready for that next week,
Ooh.
I believe.
Ooh.
We got to see a bit more of Immortals Phoenix Rising thing as well, and I keep on flip-flopping on whether I'm interested in that game or not. Reviews came out this week as well, and I'm still unsure, but hey.
I need to look at reviews. The stuff I saw from influencers was very positive, but they were all paid for, so I'm not 100% on.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's three views rather than reviews, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have to skip community feedback this week because, like I say, we are very short on time. We did get podcast reviews, but I'll save them for next week as well.
I just want to say thank you for those.
Yep, thank you. Two from the same person, I believe, so I'll check them for next week.
One thing, though,
if you would...
I just wanted to mention, because he spoke about it on Twitter with me as well, that Horace on Switch was coming as a thing. I saw a trailer for it this week. It looks really interesting, especially for gamers of our age. I'll leave it at that for now, but I might do some homework on that.
Yes, if you'd like to review the show, it does help us. It helps us in the rankings on the various platforms and to be seen and what have you. You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts, CastBox, Podchaser, and Stitcher. If you can't leave a review, if you've already left a review, then word of mouth does help. Tell your friends who like video games, who like podcasts. We're available, Big Red Barrel UK. We're also available on YouTube, on Big Red Barrel TV. Or if, you know, people on Twitter, they go, hey, have you got any podcast recommendations? Because I always see those because some people just don't know how Google works. throw in a Big Red Barrel UK, BRB UK, link, all that stuff.
Yeah.
We've got to go now because we need to keep these shows to a strict 1 hour, even though we've gone over an hour because Dan's headset is going to die and I need to do behind the scenes work because it's all very busy at BRB Towers at the minute.
It certainly is. So all that really remains, aside from thank you one and all for downloading us and letting us nestle in your ear face, is that I have been Dan.
I might have been Tim.
I've been Coleman.
Yeah, you have. 3 out of 3, lads. Well done. I think we should take the rest of the night
good
off.
Good work.
All right,
I've got to edit.
Oh, well, apart from you, Coleman. I'm going to gallivant around the streets of Slough. What are you going to do, Tim?
I'm going to create a Mario Kart course around my lounge.
Why not?
Yep.
Of course you are.
Exactly. All right. Stare at waveforms till 2 in the morning.
Lovely. Right, so that's your lot. Make sure you go to www.bigredbarrel.com, twitter.com/bigredbarrel, facebook.com/bigredbarrel, and come say hello on our Discord, which you will find a link to on the front page of aforementioned website. So come say hi. We like to say hi back. All kinds
we'll
of things.
We'll say hi.
Hi. Right, so we're going to go now. So... thank you very much for listening, and until next time, dear listeners, toodle-bye.
You and your ears are quite welcome
for the podcasting goodness that you just heard.
Why not roll on over
to BigRedBarrel.com
for more podcasts,
news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.